See, there you go. He has
Great.
The magic touch. Excellent.
Great.
Hey, Tom, thank you. It indicated that the call is being recorded. So let me go ahead and get started. Hi, my name is Mark Steinman, and I'm a member of the Storytelling and Organization group. And it is my pleasure today to help facilitate our conversation and to introduce our guest speaker, Henry DeVries, who is the CEO and acquisitions editor. But I want to share a little bit more information with you. Henry is a best-selling author and a storyteller as well. He speaks to thousands of different business leaders all over, including professionals and consultants every year. He is also a teacher and professor at the university level, specifically at the University of California, San Diego. Along with a number of his best-selling books like Self-Marketing Secrets, Client Seduction, Painkiller Marketing, and How to Close a Deal like Warren Buffett. I think you saw that in what we had sent out. Mm-hmm. He is also a presenter, and his most popular presentations have titles like Growing Your Business for Consultants, The Science of Storytelling, Top 14 Ways to Attract Clients, and Attracting Clients is Not Rocket Surgery. In addition to authoring his own books, he ghostwrites at least 4 books a year, and he's a researcher and educator, as I mentioned, at the University of California, San Diego. And his motto is, trust me, I'm a book doctor. He literally helps consult and translate the expertise in people's heads into words on paper that attract both high-paying clients and profitable speaking engagements like an electromagnet. And Henry and I got connected through a colleague of mine. His name is Jason, and he is his position title is Chief Storyteller. But he is the founder and CEO of an organization called Miller Farms, which helps organizations tell their stories. And Jason highly recommended Henry, and when Henry and I talked, it was clear to me that what Henry would be able to share with us would be not only enlightening, but really valuable for us as storytellers in organizations. Henry, I'd like to open it up for you to share some of your thoughts and comments.
Well, Mark, that's a lot of pressure. That is a lot of pressure. I don't know. We're going to go around. We'll share some things. Hey, I'm curious. We got some people around here. You can just weigh in. It's Academy Awards week. Favorite movie? Not a this year, but any year. Anybody want to shoot out a favorite movie?
The Horse Soldiers of John Wayne.
The Horse Soldiers, okay.
Animal House. Ride.
Animal House. Knowledge is good. That was the statue of Animal House. Okay.
Being There Cinema with Peter Sellers.
Ooh, Being There. Ooh.
Cinema Paradiso.
Chauncey Gardner.
Yes, Chauncey Gardner.
Yeah. Mm. To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Wow.
Atticus says it's a sin to kill a mockingbird. And something about football and the Methodists. Okay. To Kill a Mockingbird. Okay. Who else?
Cinema Paradiso.
Very arty of you. Okay.
Cinema Paradiso.
Oh, I said yes, very arty of you. You're going with that Italian thing. Who else we got?
I had
to play
Prince's Bride.
Oh, The Prince's Bride by William Goldman. One of my favorites.
Oh, my gosh, great movie.
Whenever my wife texts me that she wants something like from the store or anything, I always text back, as you wish. Okay, well, movies are important. Because of the storytelling nature. Probably if we're storytellers, we're all in the movies and all that. What I do, basically, is I help consultants prepare, publish, promote books that will attract clients, put money in their pocket, and help them make the difference that they want to make. A lot of it comes down to giving them not to talk in these abstract terms, but to really break it down to a story. And there's certain elements of it. I tell them things like more companies are hiring experts now to come in and teach their executive storytelling, like FedEx is doing that, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, relatable stories to help persuade people. Probably my most popular speaking topic right now is persuade with a story. Mm-hmm. How to do this. I just got a nice email the other day. This is not a humble brag. This is an outright brag. This CEO,
hello.
Not a professional speaker. Hello. This CEO, not a professional speaker, was speaking in front of 500 very important people to him. He said after he heard me speak, he threw away the PowerPoint, thank goodness, and went up there and just told a story that everybody could relate to make his point. And he said the reaction was tremendous. So you know that. You know what this is about. What I wanted to share with you is when I'm teaching authors, these consultants mainly, that there are 8 great stories out there, that every book should be one of these stories, these meta stories. And I got this, again, I said I've never had an original idea in my life. It's all R&D, Rob and Duplicate. I Rob and Duplicated this from Christopher Booker. He's a British journalist, still alive, Lord love him, in his 70s, writing a column in London. And he wrote a book about 10 years ago called The 7 Plots. And it was all about these 7 basic stories that humans have told since recorded history. So he looked at all the plays and fairy tales and fables and saw that these same 7 were coming up over and over again. He called them plots. I don't want to get nerdy and technical on it, but they're not really plots. They're more meta stories. And then about 150 years ago, an 8th was added, and now there are 8. And I found it very fascinating. If you haven't read the book yet, I really recommend the book to you, because it really looks at the psychology. He's very into Jung psychology on why we tell these stories, why people need to have them. I mean, every movie that you look at, every novel out there are one of these stories. Then I took his work and I compared it to the 100 greatest business bestsellers of all time and found out they follow these same 8 meta story patterns. So really briefly, what they are is the monster story, the underdog story, comedy, tragedy, mystery, quest, rebirth, and escape. I delve deeper. There's a great 2008 article in Scientific American about the psychology of storytelling and why these patterns are there. There's some great work that's come out of Vanderbilt University, where they gave 2 groups of people information to help make a decision. One group, they gave them the facts and figures and everything they needed to analyze it. The other group, they just gave them a story that to hear about it. And, of course, the story group was much more persuaded than the people who had all the information. And that's because of where story hits us in our brain, that it goes right to emotions, and emotions are really where we make decisions. And that's why I got really fascinated in these 8 stories. I'm going to hit them really quick and then talk about the 3 must-have characters that work in. The first one is the monster story, the overcoming the monster story. It's Jaws, it's Beowulf, it's Dracula, it's all of these stories. And it's about something terrible and horrible that must be overcome. In a business book, it is about a big problem and a solution. The problem-solution books are really monster books. And, you know, like Jaws in 30 seconds is, hey, it's great for tourism. People are at the beach. Oh, no, everybody get out of the beach. There's a shark. We need to hire somebody to kill the shark. I'll kill the shark. Hey, I killed the shark. That's not the real shark. I'm going to need a bigger boat. That's Jaws. Beowulf, same story. It's, hey, it's really good at the Viking Hall. Oh, no, a monster comes in at night and eats Viking. I'll kill the monster, said Beowulf. I killed the monster. That's not the real monster. That's its baby. The mother monster is coming, and she's pissed. That's Beowulf, you know. And then, you know, it's like Fatal Attraction, where whenever the monster you think is dead, it always comes back for one more, you know, assault. So that's the monster story, the underdog story. This is the Cinderella story, the David versus Goliath story. You know, the plucky person who has something greater inside that they even know. Usually they're an orphan. And then, by the way, I have completely ruined movies for my family. We'll be sitting on the couch and the Disney movie's on, like Ratatouille, and this father rat says to this baby rat, you know, I know life has been difficult for you since your mother died. And my children all shout out, underdog story, rat wins in Act 3. So, yeah, that's how it goes. You know, when somebody's an orphan, you know that this is the start of the underdog story. You can see that coming. And it might be, you know, Cinderella. It might be David versus Goliath, where it's somebody going against somebody more powerful. They win in Act 3. Comedy and tragedy, these two things. And they're two separate stories. It's not about funny or sad. Comedy and tragedy are about problem solving. Really, all the stories are about problem solving. But in a comedy, you solve a problem with a wacky idea. In a tragedy, you solve a problem with an idea that goes against the laws of God, nature, society. And with a comedy, with the wacky idea, things get more and more complicated until it all works out at the end. As I said in Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, you know, a happy ending, of course. So if you think of a movie like Tootsie, I'm an actor, I can't get a job, I'm too short, I'm too Jewish, I'm too old. I know, I'll disguise myself as a woman, audition for a soap opera. You know, what could possibly go wrong? So he does it, and then he gets the part, he gets a bigger part, the lech doctor on the show is trying to French kiss him, he falls in love with the nurse thinks it's just a woman who's her good friend, but she's conflicted about her feelings, but it all works out in the end. Tragedy is where you say, I'm going to take the shortcut. It might work out at the start, but a tragedy always ends badly. It ends with death. Breaking Bad. Oh, I'm a high school teacher and I have cancer. How am I going to take care of my family after I die? I know. I'll make meth in an RV. What could possibly go wrong? And then hijinks ensue, and we know how that ended badly, because that's the tragic thing. I also look at Scarface, if you remember the Al Pacino movie Scarface. Scarface was the story of an immigrant, like my father, who's an immigrant to America. And my father started a dairy farm, and we were in the dairy business. And you know, Tony started out in the cocaine business. And it's like first you get the money, then you get the power, then you get the women. And, you know, I think it would have gone better for him if he'd gone into something else like Amway. You know, first you get the product, then you get the downline distributors, then you go to the incentive convention, and then you get the women. We know how his tragedy ended there in a shootout in Miami. That's a tragedy. We come back to, okay, but what about business books? Well, an underdog about a little company that goes against the big companies is the underdog story. Comedy, some things like Richard Branson's book about the virgin companies, about being a virgin. That's a comedy take on business. Tragic take, Liar's Poker, Too Big to Fail, Barbarians at the Gate are all tragedy business stories. The next category is that category that got started 150 years ago. It was invented in Baltimore, Maryland by Edgar Allan Poe, and then it was perfected by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in London. It is the mystery, you know, with Sherlock Holmes. So there's something that the reader knows the answer to, but has to watch if the hero can figure it out, or along with the hero, they're on this journey to figure out this strange mystery. And if you look at every police procedural show on TV right now, every CSI, Miami, Vegas, New York, Cleveland, I know there's no CSI Cleveland, but there will be soon. And it'll start by going, I know one thing, Frank. He just made a mistake by the lake. And then the Who will come on. Yeah! That'll be the CSI Cleveland. But the point is, all of these shows are, there's a mystery, they're using science, you're following along, and then you're figuring out. That's the mystery story. Any business book that's about cracking the code, the secrets of this, solving something, the riddle, they're using mystery language and mystery formatting to tell their story. The next one is the quest. The quest is, well, think of Indiana Jones after the Ark of the Covenant, or think of him after the Holy Grail, or Alan Quatermain after King Solomon's Mine, anything where you're going after a prize. It's this journey venture. Any books that are how-to books, How to Win Friends and Influence People is a quest book. My book, How to Close Deals Like Warren Buffett, that's a quest book. So a lot of the how-to books are quest books because you want to do something. The next two stories, Rebirth and Escape. Rebirth is something was dead, has come back to life. It's the phoenix rising. It's a resurrection. It's this change. So think of the Christmas Carol. Marley was dead, first of all. That's how that book begins. And a lot of people think when we get to characters that Scrooge is the villain of the Christmas Carol. Scrooge is the hero of the Christmas Carol. He gets redeemed through the night by the three ghosts that visit him. I mean, who took care of Tiny Tim's operation? It wasn't Bob Cratchit's healthcare spending account and HMO or Obamacare. It was Scrooge came in and paid for the operation at the end because he was reborn. All this happened. So the next one is Escape. And Escape is when you're in a normal place. Then you go to Crazy Town, and you got to get out. And when you think of escape, you think of Alice in Wonderland. You know, she's in normal England, falls down the rabbit hole. And by the way, was Lewis Carroll on drugs or not when he wrote that book? You know, take this and you get large, take this and you get small. I think Jefferson Airplane wrote the definitive song on that. my favorite escape story, though, is The Wizard of Oz. It's the 75th anniversary. You can see this in 3D on IMAX. It is the most sick and twisted, dysfunctional story that we passed off as children's fair every year. Get the kids around the TV screen and watch this. If I was going to write the DVR remote, you know, click the info button, what's the plot of The Wizard of Oz? It's girl lands in strange land and kills. Makes three friends and kills again. That is the plot of The Wizard of Oz. And I think the bar to be the good witch in Oz is pretty low, because the most passive-aggressive mentor in all of literature is Glinda the Good. Let's put scare quotes around the word good. The good witch. Not scarecrow, scare quote. That's when you use a word when you're writing a book and you want to say, I know it's not really this, but I'll put quotation marks around it. So here's why I think Glinda's passive-aggressive. What did she tell Dorothy at the end on how Dorothy could get home? Click your heels three times together and say there's no place like home. That is really great advice, and it worked. Dorothy could have used it when the house landed on the witch in the beginning. But Glinda's advice was follow the yellow brick road through a haunted forest, through a poison poppy field, get inside a fortress, meet the con man who runs it, follow his instructions, which happened to be, I want you to attack a bigger fortress on top of a mountain with a wicked witch inside that is guarded by flying monkeys. If I was Dorothy, I'd be looking for a bucket of water for that biatch right about then when that instruction came in. But Glenda was actually her mentor. I have a new book coming out called Marketing with a Book, and we were going over the galley last night, and we were really talking about the character part, because here's the segue to characters that I tell people. There are three must-have characters. You have to have a hero, or a protagonist, if you will. You have to have a villain, a nemesis, an antagonist, if you will. And you need to have a mentor, a wizard. Now, if this was an advanced screenwriting class and all this, we would talk about, you know, there are eight characters, and then there are another eight characters that can be on top of that. You know, Clang, that's nerd talk. We don't want to go that deep. That CEO just had to give a speech. If I could just get him to tell one of these eight stories and have these three characters in it, I knew he'd be a winner. So the first character is the hero, the protagonist, somebody who's trying to make it happen. What I teach these consultants and CEOs, when they tell the story, they are not the hero of the story. They need to make their client or whoever they helped be the hero of the story. It's their story, how that person they helped got the dream, which means they need to be the mentor character. You know, it's the wizard, the mentor. Glinda, to her defense, did, when the house landed on her, got the ruby slippers on Dorothy to protect her. Said, you need to go see the wizard, because when at the end she said, you wouldn't have believed me on how to get home at the start. You needed to go through this journey to learn it. I don't know if I bought it if I'm Dorothy at that time. But look at Star Wars. And with Star Wars, we have a hero, Luke Skywalker. When we find him, this is in the first Star Wars movie that came out in the 70s. It's number 4 in the sequence. And I have a lot of nerds, science fiction nerds at my house, so I've always got to be careful that I say Star Wars and not Star Trek, or they all go crazy on this. Star Wars is Luke Skywalker. He is living on a sand planet, helping his aunt and uncle farm water. I think we have an underdog story right there. You know, this is an underdog. And he gets called to adventure by this, you know, emergency message from a princess, Princess Leia, and it's to somebody called Obi-Wan Kenobi. Okay. That's how we know Star Wars starts. For our purposes, we'll say that movie had Darth Vader as a nemesis. And it had, in the beginning, Obi-Wan Kenobi as the mentor, the wizard, the helper, until, plot spoiler here, he dies, and then a new mentor needs to come in, Master Yoda, the little green Jedi Knight, who has a hard time with his grammar. judge me by my size, you will. It's more like a dangling participle. That's how you're writing for Yoda, you know. It's always a dangling participle. Or he talks kind of like the Irish. By yourself, you happen to be. you have to get into the thing there. So you always have to think in your story, who's the Luke, who's the Darth, who's the Yoda? For my nerdy storytelling friends, yes, another plot spoiler here. Darth Vader is not the real villain and nemesis of the Star Wars saga. That's the Emperor. Darth Vader, plot spoiler, is actually Luke's father. Vader, in German, father. We had a clue there. And, you know, it was sort of laid out there, but a lot of us missed it when it first went by. If you think about these people when you're telling the story, you can put something compelling. When you want to persuade people, the hero of your story needs to be somebody that the person you're trying to persuade can relate to. So if you're trying to persuade a prospect to become a client, you tell them a story about a client that was like them. Of course, I get caught at this. My daughter the other night, we're trying to be healthier, and she put on the shopping list Dr. Pepper. And I said, you know, I'm not going to buy Dr. Pepper. I said, you know, I used to work at a company and the president there, I suggested we buy soda for the employees. And she had really learned about the dangers of soda, and she would buy other things like water and fruit juice, but her conscience wouldn't allow her to buy soda. I said, not a lecture, just a story. My daughter said, oh, that was a lecture disguised as a story. I said, well, yeah, I guess. But so you tell these stories for a purpose. If it's to get employees to get more engaged, then you have to tell a story about an employee who you helped get more engaged. The tricky part I find on these stories is for people to come up with the villain, the nemesis. And they think it needs to be a character, but it can just be whatever is the conflict holding the hero back from getting what they want. So I tell people when they're telling client stories that they should do things where they can talk about if it's the economy, then the economy can be the nemesis, or if it's laws and regulation, that can be the nemesis. It can be in there. So looking at the time, that's my basic, and I wanted to turn it over at this time for questions.
Okay. Henry, thank you very much for sharing your insight. I especially love the eight stories and then the three characters. I think that really puts in some interesting perspective, especially from a business perspective. Any questions that you might have out there for Henry?
This is Tricia. I don't have a question, but Henry, I think you are a character, and I've so enjoyed your presentation. It's been a long day, and I'm sitting here chuckling out loud. So thanks for – loved your content, but loved the way you presented it as well. So there you
go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tricia.
Henry, this is Tom. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how maybe one dominant theme has all kinds of sub-themes. You know, underdog stories are often very comical, you know, or maybe even turn out, you know, as a rebirth tale or something.
Yeah, and if I'm understanding you right, maybe it's like, can some of these be combined? Which, I don't know, is
yeah.
that your question? Because I'll answer that. I'm like a politician.
Okay.
I just listen to your question and then I give the answer I want. Monster and underdog get combined a lot because the underdog is going against some monster. Somebody's favorite movie was The Princess Bride, though, and that is interesting in that the nemesis, villain character, does not get killed in the end. It's not a monster story where, you know, Prince Humperdinck needs to be killed. And the child who the story is being read to, you know, the Fred Savage character and Peter Falk is reading it to him, the grandpa. You know, the kid is like, well, this is unfair. This is unfair that, you know, he doesn't get killed. And he goes, well, who said life's fair? You know, a lot of times, you know, the underdogs got what they want, true love, but, you know, nobody was made to suffer. So a lot of those things get married. And again, any of these can be funny. Breaking Bad. Let's take Breaking Bad, the high school chemistry teacher who decides to make the world's greatest meth in his RV. That could be a comedy. That could be this wacky comedy about hijinks ensue and get chased. And in the end, it all works out, a happy ending, of course, called a Hollywood ending. You could go in that direction with it. So the other things is sometimes mysteries get combined with these other things. Sometimes you don't know the difference between rebirth and escape. I helped someone write a book called The Prodigal Executive, and he was a little hesitant to name it that because he was Jewish and said, you know, it's a Christian parable in here. I said, this story is universal. I'm sure if we hunted the scriptures enough, we'll find the same story. For those of you who don't remember Sunday school, or I know we all have different religions. I'm not teaching religion here, but the prodigal son is the story of a farmer who has two sons, and he doesn't want to wait until he dies to give the inheritance out. He gives it to the two sons while they're living, and the first son says, this is great, Dad. I'm going to really help you make this ranch, this farm great. And the other son says, I am out of here. You know, thanks for the money. And he goes off to the big city, and he spends his money on hookers and gambling and booze, and then the rest of the money he wastes. They always have to wait three beats. Didn't get a laugh on that one. Okay, so then...
I was on mute. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, okay. The audience was with me on that one. Okay, so then... He's eating, you know, the prodigal son is eating out of a trough with pigs, you know, unclean animal, and decides that the lowest minimum wage worker back on the farm has it better than he does. He goes back and comes back thinking his father will, you know, shame him and scold him, but maybe if he begged him hard enough, he'll give him a job. Instead, the father runs out to meet him. He declares it a holiday. They're going to kill the fatted calf and eat at the fiesta, get him new clothes. And if you're a parent, you realize what's going on here. But the brother says, oh, Dad, what about me? I've been working here with you. I never got a fiesta. We never killed the fatted calf for me. I never got a new suit of clothes. And the father says, your brother, who was dead to us, has come back to life. Come in the party and rejoice. This is in the book of Luke. What Luke doesn't provide us with is what the brother decided to do. That's left up for us, the reader, to decide. Did he forgive his brother and go back in? Did he? Well, he had the right to be righteously indignant and stay outside. During one of my speeches, somebody raised their hand and said, Henry, I have a question. I said, yeah. Was this the older brother? So I said, I guess that would matter. Yeah, the older brother, I think we'd figure out what I don't know. Luke doesn't give that to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that story could be a rebirth story. It could be an escape story. But the way Luke told it, where he said he was dead to us, he's come back to life, tells us that that's a rebirth theme. Redemption stories are rebirth stories because we put away old things. Any other questions?
Any others? I have a question. Can you hear me? This is Laverne Schuler.
Laverne, state are you calling from?
South Carolina.
South Carolina, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Yes. in your introduction, there was a mention of the science of storytelling, a presentation that you've done. Could you tell us a little bit about that? I'm very intrigued about science, so I always...
Well, you heard a lot of it, or just in brief. So I'll go over with people that, you know, a lot of people think storytelling is an art, but... the research that's coming out of Vanderbilt, the ones that are included in Scientific American, a lot of the work with neurosciences, where they're looking at the three different parts of the brain, and when you're telling a story, what part of the brain is lighting up and where we're hitting it. So in that Vanderbilt study, when you gave people the facts and figures, it was that new part of our brain, the outer part of the brain that lit up and fired, but that is not the part that makes decisions. And it's not what they call the lizard brain, that one that is at the core, which is the one that basically follows the four Fs, fight, flight, feed, or fornicate. You know, those are our me eat it, me make love to it, you know, me run from it, me kill it. You know, that, it's not that part of the brain. So there's this other part, sort of our mammal brain, that processes emotions. And that's where the science is showing that storytelling goes right into there. So
okay.
That's it. You know, and you can use things like Jungian psychology and all that. I think the neurosciences is much more interesting. Again, I refer you to the 2008 Scientific American article on the science of storytelling. I think that would be useful.
Could you say that again, Henry?
Yes, I refer you to the 2008 Scientific American. I believe it's the September issue, and it's on the science of storytelling.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, Henry, thank you, thank you, thank you so very much for your time and sharing your thoughts and insights. I know that others, as well as myself, enjoyed what you had to share. And so on behalf of the group, just wanted to say thank you, you know, very much for everything that you shared. And then, you know, just because I know this is being recorded, I know that Henry can be reached at henry@indiebooksintl.com. Or I know if people would like to follow up, they could follow up with you at 800-514-4467. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And Indie is spelled I-N-D-I-E, not I-N-D-Y. So that would be for like the Indie Colts or the Indie 500. My Indie is for independent. It's like Indie Records or Indie Films. We're helping people independently publish their books. So you get the rigor of a real publisher, but a much better financial deal. So that's where we're at. It's a part of a whole big movement. I am just small player in big cosmic drama, but that's where I play.
Well, I do know because the conversation has happened over the last year plus or so, where there's a number of folks that are consultants that are leveraging story in what they're doing, and they have their own story to tell. And I really like the fact that you help to bring the story and the marketing piece together so that people can leverage that. So thank you very much.
Well, this is great. I enjoyed talking about it. If a year from now you want something else, invite me and would love to talk to you all.
Thank you so much, Henry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a great one. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Tom, anything else that you want to share or to wrap up?
No. Well, I guess everybody's probably aware that we have Annette Simmons as our pre-conference seminar leader this summer, just before the NSN conference. So hopefully many of us can take advantage of that. It's going to be capped at 30, so it's actually not open for registration yet. They're getting ready to do that. But we'll do that soon. And as Mark mentioned, we've done some work on our website, and I have links to that in my last note. And next time I send out a note to the group, I'll link it again. So I think that's about it.
Great. Well, thank you again, everybody. Tom, if you can manage the controls to take us off recording, that would be awesome. I'd appreciate it.
And then we'll have our board meeting. Thanks.
Yep. Bye. Hey, everyone. Thank you very much for participating.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
All right.